Welcome in to another edition of Rattling Cages right here on Fan Run Radio, live in the White Claw Hard Seltzer Studios. Jake Miller, JL Steele, your NASCAR hour here on Fan Run Radio, Rattling Cages, 105.7 FM, 1340 AM, online at fanrunradio.com and your free Fan Run Radio app. What a weekend it was last weekend. Not necessarily for the excitement of the race, but JL, I feel like we had a pretty good showing with our predictions there when you look at the results from last week.
Yeah, we did pretty well. You know, hopefully it'll keep up today. But, you know, really, last week was, I don't want to say it was easy, but, I mean, Larson, I think it was general consensus. He was the man to beat and, you know, put on a show last week. And I don't think anybody, if anybody was surprised, they just weren't paying attention to the sport heading into the race.
And I think that had a lot to do with, you know, how we made our picks last week. I mean, we've reached the point in the season now, and our friend Jordan Moore, who's really big into college basketball analytics but also really big into NASCAR, he brought up something last year, and it really made a lot of sense. He said, well, take a look at who is top 10 in practice, and then look at your top 10 in qualifying, and you should be able to pick a winner just based off of that. He's like, look at how they're running in practice, who's running good in practice, and then who was able to replicate that in qualifying. And that's kind of how I've, you know, been basing my picks off of throughout throughout the duration of, you know, as long as I've been talking about NASCAR on radio. But that's been, you know, my go-to, and it's proven true. I mean, the only tracks in which you can say that it really doesn't rain true, I mean, obviously your super speedways are about it. Like Daytona, Talladega, just throw it out the window. And really, you could almost argue the Roval, which, I mean, we've grown to know who's going to dominate at those tracks and who's going to do well, who's not going to do well. And the only thing unpredictable about those at this point is who's going to crash in a heartburn turn. That's about what we've not figured out, is who's going to crash in a heartburn turn.
Yeah, well, your three picks last week, all finishing the top four. You had Larson, Reddick, and Chastain. You had 1, 2, and 4 right there. So you come away with the Vegas win. Well done.
I'll take it. I will definitely take it. Now, of course, you know, we're headed to Phoenix Raceway today. That's going to be a I wouldn't say it's going to be like a top-tier, like must-see race, because you're either going to get really good at this track or it's just going to be boring, in my opinion. Like, this is a track in which I wish they weren't doing the championship race here. Quite frankly, I don't know. I almost want it back in Atlanta, to be honest with you.
I'd love to see it there. It was there for years. I've been there in person. And, yes, I put up with snow. I put up, you know, as well as sunshine. You get all kinds of weather. But I'm even okay with it going back to Homestead. If they want a better guarantee of good weather, I get that. Homestead was a better finale than Phoenix is.
And, I mean, and there's been some of those Homestead races in which you just – I don't know. You just don't want to watch sometimes. But,
yeah,
you know, I keep thinking back to that old Atlanta configuration – and, I mean, I just keep thinking about that. And, you know, Homestead really did, because everyone had said for years, like, oh, we need to move it out of Miami. Let's move it out of Miami. Well, you did, and it's not creating the product that you might want. I mean, we've already had a Mickey Mouse ring. What else have we had out there? We've had a couple of things happen out in Phoenix. But, you know, Homestead, it really does have that old Atlanta feel to it in a way. And, I mean, I'm kind of like you. I mean, it wouldn't bother me if they did just move it back there. Or Atlanta, I mean, just somewhere where we're going to get a good race. That's all I want. And I know that's all that the NASCAR fan base wants. And I think Woke Steve even called in this past Thursday onto the G.I. Jake show and said that they might even be toying around with a truck series at Dodger Stadium. I'm just like, why?
Well, I don't know. Listen, what I saw when the truck series, they were looking at moving the Clash to Dodger Stadium, you know, which is just a joke. Just don't get me started. I mean, it's bad enough. For some reason, they keep insisting on telling us that they need that LA market. And, you know, the top five and the top 10 TV markets come out every week, like Monday or Tuesday. I have yet to see LA in the top 10 TV markets for the sport. You know, I mean, I understand the size of the city, the size of the metropolitan area, the population, but, you know, when Greensboro and Indianapolis far outrank Los Angeles when it comes to NASCAR ratings, that's where your people are. That's where your fans are. Quit telling yourself otherwise.
Right. I mean, that's just like trying to force me or force you to watch cricket for 8 hours a day. It's like, you know, you can put this in front of my face all you want, but I'm still not going to have any vested interest in it. I'm going to be on my phone the entire time. I'm going to be doing something else the entire time while that cricket match, game, whatever they call it, is in front of my face. Like, I'm just not going to do it. If you put NASCAR and you keep trying to shove it in the fans' face, or lack thereof fans, out in L.A., it doesn't mean that they're just going to flock to it.
Especially when it's at a gimmicky track like the Coliseum or Dodger Stadium. What are you showing them? You're not showing them your real product. You're not showing them what you get the rest of the season. You know, I just don't get it. I'm an old guy, okay? I'm in my 50s, and I realize soccer is more popular in the U.S. now than it's ever been. But here's my history with soccer. We had to, when I was in grade school, late 70s, we had to do soccer in gym class. And the reason we were told was it's a sport of the future, okay? I get in high school in the 80s, mid to late 80s, same thing, soccer and P.E. You know why? It's a sport of the future. Everybody's going to be playing soccer, okay? Heard that for like 40 years. Soccer, I understand, is finally kind of taking off in this country. It's still a niche sport. It's never going to be the NFL. It's never going to be the NBA. It's never going to be MLB, okay? It's like I kind of get the same feeling about what NASCAR is doing right now. Quit telling us what it's going to be, okay? How many, 20 years now they've been chasing this elusive new fan. And how many old fans have you left behind because you have this idea of what you want it to be? Maybe it gets there. Maybe it doesn't. Why not embrace what you are, present the very best of what you are instead of gimmicking everything up? I don't get it.
That's exactly, I couldn't have phrased it any better, because right now, I mean, you mentioned soccer, you know, being the sport of the future, even though basketball, you know, kind of took on this global sport feel to it, because now, I mean, all you need a ball and a basket. That's all you need. Soccer, you at least have to have a goal or something that represents a goal. Like, basketball's taking on more of a life than its own than I would say soccer has, because, I mean, you see the NBA getting players globally now.
Yeah.
And, you know, NASCAR is one of those sports. You just mentioned the top TV markets, and they're just about the same week in and week out.
Yeah.
It's like, go to where your fans are. Like, embrace those fans. Embrace the ones that have been with you for years and years and years, decades in my case, in your case, and just make it what you need it to be. Not what you want it to be, what you need it to be.
Yeah, and you know, right now I just pulled up top TV markets for NASCAR. It's going off last year's numbers. And just take a guess, top four.
Top four, Greenville, North Carolina is definitely going to be one.
Greenville's number three.
Knoxville, Tennessee.
Number four.
I would say probably the South Carolina, something in the South Carolina market.
Well, you got Charlotte, number one, and Greensboro, number two. So it's Charlotte, Greensboro, Greenville, and Knoxville. There's your top four.
There you have it. I mean, that's about as cut and dry as you can make it.
You know, I'm looking now, pulled up the top 10. I see nothing west of the Mississippi. Farthest west looks to be Indianapolis.
Wow.
And they came in at number six.
I mean, and so there it is. I mean, there you have it. That's your target demographic.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just like if we were to get a sponsor on this show, which you can do, all you have to do is DM me or DM JL, and we'll make it happen for you. But like that's like us trying to get a sponsor that is a Los Angeles-based company that only sells products in Los Angeles. The only way for our fans to go and buy that product would be to go online and have it shipped to them directly. Well, you can't feel the product in that case. And if it's an edible product, you cannot taste that product. That was probably a bad word to use, but we did it anyway. but I mean, you get the point. Everyone listening to this gets the point. It's like, if you have a target demographic, if you have a well-known audience base and you know what they want, you have to deliver to them, which Fan Run Radio is going to do, hopefully, for the first weekend of March Madness. We have plans in the works for that. Would love to see everybody come out for that if you're into college basketball. Trying to work on a couple of watch parties for some NASCAR races as well. Those are in the works. Hopefully we can get those deals signed and done here momentarily as in like the next week. But
cool.
Hopefully we can get that done. But yeah, you get a lot of insight to the business perspective of the sport as well. And we're actually going to be talking with Spotter Tim here in about 10-ish minutes or so. And he's going to break down, you know, really what goes on behind the scenes because, you know, I mentioned it, you know, in this interview that we did pre-recorded on Friday that, you know, a lot of the times those guys don't get enough recognition unless something goes wrong.
Yeah, absolutely. And he's going to bring some great insight. And I think it's going to be a good interview for a lot of folks who don't realize Tim's history and what he's done in the sport. He doesn't tweet much about it. He does more other sports because he takes in more college basketball games and minor league baseball games literally than anybody that I know. His job allows him a lot of freedom to travel. He kind of schedules his routes where he can pick up games. And I mean, when we were talking before the interview with him on Friday, he had seen an ASUN game between Lipscomb and North Alabama on Tuesday of last week. And then
Friday, he was going to watch.
He wasn't in St. Louis, but he was in. Who was he watching?
I think he was driving. Was it Cincinnati where he was driving up to?
I can't remember. I meant an OVC game, maybe. So
that's it.
Yeah, I mean, he's catching mid-majors through the week, so he's. I'm jealous. I'm envious of the guy, what he gets to take in. But
absolutely.
He's going to get some great insight.
He's got great insight, and I mean, the thing is, like, somebody like that, like, he's going to give us a different insight to the sport in which you don't normally get, and that's something that, you know, we've been able to pride ourselves on is the fact that we can get different perspectives from different parts of the sport and bring it to you, not just, you know, we're going to have a different driver on every week or this, that, and the other. We're going to have this guy on who is a reporter. Now, we have had reporters on like Bob and Jeff, and they've been fantastic. They did a great job, and I wouldn't mind having those guys back. But, you know, like JNL and I have said multiple times, you know, you get these interviews, and you just have to make it happen. And another thing you have to remember is when they're going to happen and put the right time slot in your phone. That way you don't forget about it. That may or may not have happened this past week, but luckily we were able to get it down and then get through all the technical difficulties on the back end of it to make it happen. But, you know, talking with Tim, I mean, not just about NASCAR, but talking about other sports as well, this guy's a wealth of just athletic knowledge. Like, that's the best way you can describe it. He's just a wealth of athletic knowledge, almost an encyclopedia.
And this didn't come up in the interview. I don't know if I told you, but I think he got his start years ago working in sports information at DePaul, back when DePaul was still a basketball power. So he's been around. And Tim's one of the guys that when we started this show, I said, I want to get him on. And I think we talked about that at the beginning of the interview, so I won't repeat myself. But I think he brings a different perspective, and I think fans are going to enjoy listening to him, and I hope they follow him.
Fans will definitely enjoy this one. I mean, he's ranking up there right now with Ken Rutger as far as guys that we need to just do a series of interviews with. And it's like,
well, you know, I've already talked. I talked to Tim Friday. We were texting after the interview, and he was very close. And he mentions this a little bit, folks will hear, but he was very close with Kenny Irwin Jr. And I hope to have him back at some point and just talk about Kenny, because I think Kenny's never gotten the attention he deserved because he didn't do as well as expected in that Robert Yates 28 Haviland car, and people kind of poo-pooed him over the years. But Kenny had a great career up to that point. Tim was involved with it, was friends with him. I'd love to get him back to talk about Kenny.
That would be very fun. Like, I'm all in on that, just because those old stories. And because, I mean, you got to think back in the day. I mean, you had to race your way into the sport. Like, you had to go out and you had to absolutely earn your spot. Otherwise, you were not going to get a spot.
Yeah, and I'll tell you something else, talking about Ken and Tim. I'm pretty proud of the fact that every person that we've had on this show, I would love to have back again. We've not had a bad guest at all.
No.
I can't think of a single negative one. So we've been very blessed that those folks have come on, and we appreciate it.
I wish I could say that for the entirety of my radio career, because I've had some bad ones. I mean, I've had some awful, awful guests. And these are people that you would think, it's like, oh, well, they do this for a living. They just come right on, you tee it up for them, and bang, they hit it out of the park. That's not always the case. Like, when you have someone that has 350,000 followers on Twitter, that I'm not even going to repeat what this person does, but the fact of the matter is they came on and they were awful. Like, it was one of the most awkward and worst interviews I've ever done. And then I had another person come on who does a college football podcast daily. So you would think that they would know. how to conduct themselves in an interview. Mm. And it was awful. And then I've had a couple that have come on, and they've just been just dull, bland, boring, and ugh.
Yeah.
That's the one thing about this show is we have been very fortunate with the guests that we have had.
All great.
Absolutely. Jumping into the race today at Phoenix Raceway, the Shriners Children's 500, this is going to be Toyota Heavy.
Yep.
Starting off in the top 10. Row one, you got Denny Hamlin and Ty Gibbs, someone that we have been a little hard on the past few weeks, saying it's like, when's he going to do anything? Is he going to do anything? Well, he's starting row one today, starting in the second position. Behind them in row two, you got Chase Elliott, your golden boy. And surprisingly, and this is a guy, you know, I'm going to factor this into my formula later, JL, Erik Jones qualifies fourth, and he had a really good run in practice. So, I mean, I'm going to be paying a little bit of attention to that Legacy Motor Club 43 car today, for sure.
Yep, Chevy's gotten all the attention. You know, they're 3-0 this season. There's only, what, three Chevys in the top 10, and one of those is Carson Hocevar. So that's a bit of a surprise. But Toyota's a track, Phoenix is a track that Toyota's got a good history at. And like you said, got two of them on the front row, and also got Erik Jones up there and Tyler Reddick. So, you know, Reddick's got to be hungry after last week and letting that slip away. So I'm looking forward and hopeful we have a good race today.
Hopefully so. And in row three, you have William Byron, Tyler Reddick. Row four, got the Stewart Haas Racing tandem of Noah Gregson and Chase Briscoe, a team
they need that.
They need that
effort.
They need it bad because even Woke Steve has picked up on the museum team. Little drop-in that I do every now and again. He's like, oh, they're about to be a museum team. They very well might, but, I mean, they're at least going to have, at least I hope, a good showing day. I mean, Noah needs it. Chase definitely needs it. And then in row five, rounding out your top ten, you have Michael McDowell and Carson Hocevar. And the 77 Spire Motorsports Chevrolet. That one, you know, like you mentioned Carson, and it's like, yeah, that is very surprising to see him up running at that level. It's like, I don't think he's going to finish there. I don't even think he might not even finish inside the top 20. But, I mean, that's he's put on some good showings so far this year, regardless of his antics last year in the Truck Series.
Yeah, he's kept his nose clean, logged laps, and gaining experience. So, have to give him credit for that. It's just surprising. A lot of the big names that you expect to see up front, you know, aren't there at the beginning. Logano's in the field and Truex and Larson, those guys, they have their work cut out for them today, driving up through the field, but it's going to be interesting.
And we're going to go through your top 10 leaders in practice from Phoenix. Up first, you got Joey Logano, followed by Denny Hamlin, who sits on the pole, Tyler Reddick in the 45, John Hunter Nemechek in the 42, another Legacy Motorsports or Legacy Motor Club Toyota, Austin Cindric in fifth, Erik Jones, a guy that we just mentioned who's starting fourth in the 43, Chase Elliott comes in at number seven, Christopher Bell at number eight, Bubba Wallace nine, and number 10 in practice, right where he qualified, Carson Hocevar.
Yeah. It's,
not bad.
No, not at all. And there's a lot of guys to keep an eye on today. You know, last week all the focus was on Larson. Could he pull it off or not? Today, it's a toss-up. There's no clear-cut favor. You can make a case for a lot of guys and why they should have a strong race today. So let's see how it plays out.
Absolutely. Coming up next, we'll be doing an interview or playing an interview that we did on Friday, with spotter Tim. He is, like I said earlier, he's going to bring a different perspective that you don't normally get. And we're excited to be able to present to you this interview. Stay with us. Rattling Cages continues on right after this.
Are you ready to play hard and work harder? Are you looking to take the next...
Continues on. Jake Miller, JL, still cruising along with you on a Sunday morning right here on Fan Run Radio, 105.7 FM, 1340 AM, online at fanrunradio.com and your free Fan Run Radio app. Pleased to be joined by Tim Stevens, and just to preface this, you know, we've always talked about how we want to bring you a different perspective from every angle that we can in the sport of racing. And this is a position in which it almost feels like, you know, JL, you can back me up on this, almost like the offensive line. It's like someone who doesn't always get enough credit, and the only time the spotlight is on them is when something goes wrong.
Yeah, well, Tim, it's kind of a two-point question. I want to get started with Tim. First of all, for those who aren't familiar with you, kind of give us your background in racing and what you've done, who you're with. And then, well, let's start with that. Then I'll give you the second sure. part.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, I tell people, you know, I was born in May 6th, and I'm told that I was at the racetrack on May 30th. So, I know no part of my life when racing wasn't part of my life, you know. So, you know, I think I've seen it from a lot of different perspectives. I mean, initially as a kid, in the grandstands, but, you know, with a grandfather and an uncle who were involved on the mechanical side. And then I moved into, you know, worked on go-kart racing teams in high school and early college, and then started doing PR for a racetrack, Kentucky Motor Speedway in Whitesville, Kentucky, the birthplace of, you know, the Waltrip brothers and the Green brothers. You know, and I was there with Mike Waltrip and all three Green brothers, and I thought I was a genius marketing PR guy, but I didn't realize I had, you know, like four cup level talents that I was, you know, promoting. Therefore, it wasn't really as much me as them. But yeah, we worked at an ad agency. We represented Raybestos Brakes and Federated Auto Parts for a while. Through that, I met the folks at Liberty Racing and became the general manager of Liberty Racing, the NASCAR Truck Series team, and it started with Butch Miller, and then we had Kenny Irwin and Kevin Harvick. And then whenever that team was sold, I joined up with Thor Sport Racing and worked with Thor Sport and helped build their current senior level structure. And I also was part of the group that brought Mansfield Motorsports Speedway back to life, and then put the NASCAR truck races there. And then kind of stepped out of it. Got, you know, at the end of 06, decided it was time to quit making a living doing that, and just went into being a spotter on a part-time basis, and stayed around the sport for about another decade. So, and I've been inactive now for a while, other than hanging out with friends, going to the racetrack, meeting new people, and still enjoying the sport from the perspective of someone whose paycheck doesn't depend on it every Saturday or Sunday when the field rolls off.
Sure. Well, I wanted to start there because you're one of the guys, when we started this show, I said, we've got to get Tim on this show and get his perspective. And then just last week, you sent out a tweet, something to the effect of you didn't want to hear anything from people who'd never signed the front of a paycheck in racing. And that's when I said, okay, now's the time. Let's get Tim in here. So considering your time in the sport, particularly the truck series, you know, I guess, and we could probably spend 20 minutes talking about this, but what has happened in your view to the truck series from where it was short track racing to now we're at super speedways and we've got what, 32, 34 truck races a year? What's going on in your view?
Well, I mean, you know, and let me kind of back up real quick and preface, you know, my snarly comment about, you know, about the attitude, you know, every consumer of a product has a right to give an opinion about a product. But if you are talking about the business elements of the product, if you haven't actually done the business, then, you know, I don't really care for your opinion about it, you know. Sure. But inside the truck series, you know, the truck series is 25-year-old product now, you know, pushing 30, you know, and that's aging me. It's been almost 30. Yeah, it'll be 30 years this summer. 30 years this summer flying to Bakersfield and watching the exhibition races. Holy cow, I'm old. Yeah, I thought I was old then. But anyway, the truck series at the time it was launched as a way for NASCAR, as it was starting to put itself together, it's starting to draw together its television properties and become a unified TV property marketplace. Mm-hmm. That series was started to kind of bridge the gap between the weekly series and regional series, like the old, you know, All Pro Series, Southeast Series, things like that. And what was in the Busch Series, the two national tours. There was the space for the third national tour, and they wanted to bridge the gap. So they bridged the gap by creating the Truck Series. You know, once that series, you know, once you transitioned from where you were in 95 to where you were in 2000, 2001, and you brought the TV properties all into one place, the Truck Series changed dramatically at that moment, because the Truck Series to that point in time had been run as a series that promoters had to be able to create a business model where you could run the race, host the event, self-contain it, and make money off of it, just as a race event. It wasn't a television property, even though it had television element to it. The TV money wasn't there to make it a television property. When the rights were unified, you know, heading into the, you know, prior to the 01 season, that changed. And the television money became bigger. It also meant that television money had the right to determine more parts of the puzzle. And it took it from being where, let's go find racetracks we can go to where we can put a great stand, you know, but what kind of what we did in Mansfield, put the grandstands around the place, put on a good show, sell 25,000 tickets and make it an event. It turned into where can we go and get this thing on television so that TV can make money and pay the bills. And that's why you ended up going from so many freestanding races to combo events where you now have, you know, three series together at the same time on the same weekend. That's driven by television. It's driven by the TV, the ability to be only one production cost. You know, the other thing that happened to truck series racing, and it's gone through multiple different generations of who drives there. You know, when we started it in 95, you know, the team I was with at Liberty Racing, we had Butch Miller, and it was the epitome of what the truck series was. Guys that had really good success in other things that never quite got the toehold in Cup. And so you ended up with, you know, Mike Skinner, Ron Hornaday, mm-hmm. Jackson, Butch Miller. When Toyota came in, it shifted it from, you know, kind of that focus to a lot of folks who used to race on Sunday coming back, like Johnny Benson, Bobby Hamilton, you know, some of that type of an effect. And now what you've got is you've got it. It's a series that predominantly is a pay-to-play, you know, training ground for teenage to early 20s drivers trying to find their way from iRacing and short tracks to Sunday afternoons on Cup. Yeah. And so it's that iteration's very different, and the series has changed every step along the way.
It has, and when you look at the purses, when Bob Pockris tweets out the purses each week, I think last week at Vegas it was like maybe $750,000 for the field, $750,000 for the entire truck series.
Yeah.
What's the incentive, man? You know, if I'm own a team, what's the incentive for me to pack up and go all the way out to Vegas and for that kind of money? I mean, are we looking at beginning of the end of the series possibly, or what needs to change to make this attractive again?
Here's what I would tell you. You know, I built race team budgets for Liberty Racing and for Thor Sport Racing over a window of about 10 years from 95 to 05. And at no point in time when I built a budget did I build any allocation on the revenue side for purse money. Basically any money that came in for purse, I looked at it as money that we were going to use for bonus monies and, you know, additional capital investments that were outside our budget. Now I think if you're dependent upon, and heck, let's face it, this is true even at, you know, at the Snowball Derby and the ASA late model tour and the ARCA series is, if you're depending on the revenue being generated by the purse, you're likely not going to survive. Mm-hmm. You have to be able to generate revenue off of other parts of your race team. And that's why the truck series has become pay to play, as has ARCA, and to a great extent has a lot of the late model tours, mm-hmm. that if you can't generate the revenue, you know, that there's not enough TV money to pay your bills. There's not enough, purse money is generated from grandstands, and if you can't raise the sponsor dollars, which there generally aren't going to be for the cost we're at now, you've got to find the money somewhere, and the pay-to-play has been the way that people have, you know, kept themselves in business.
Sure. Jake, you have anything you want me to keep going?
You just keep on rambling, man. I'm gonna hold off. I'm gonna ask the fun questions at the end today.
Okay. All right. So
I thought Jake was going to say he had already fallen asleep on me. You know, he's tired of listening to me to go, you know, take a 30-second question and turn it into a 3-minute answer.
No, I love it. It's insightful for a lot of our listeners. So, you know, speaking of sponsorship and revenue and so on, how big of an issue do you think it's been over the years? And we don't see this much since they've cut back the number of races that a Cup guy can run. But, you know, if I'm a team owner, or let's say I'm a potential sponsor, why am I going to give you money when they're going to be showing Kyle Busch and they're going to be showing other Cup drivers who are dipping down, whoever it may be? how do we fix that? Or can it be fixed? Or, I mean, is that horse out of the barn already?
I think the horse is out of the barn. I mean, the cost of operation of racing at almost any high semi-pro to pro level greatly exceeds the ROI if you look at it in terms of a traditional sponsor dollar, you know, relationship. You know, the business model that we helped put together at Thor Sport Racing is the business model that I think has the greatest long-term viability and success. And there's a reason why Duke and Rhonda have stayed in that series for 20 plus years and continue to come back. You know, Duke and Rhonda's core business is a sealant company. It's a business that makes driveway sealers, roof and foundation coatings, traffic paints, barn and fence coatings, you know, fence paints, this type of thing. That relationship, that symbiotic relationship that we were able to help put together with Menards back in 2002 is the reason that team can continue. And it's not saying that the only people that can own race teams are people like Roger Penske or Rick Hendrick, who have massive amounts of businesses that they can leverage suppliers. But if you were, you know, you're asking me if I'm trying to start a race team for somebody, I'm going to be looking for them to get a partnership with someone that we can do business-to-business programs with. Because lacking business-to-business, I don't think the direct-to-consumer reach of NASCAR, and really direct-to-consumer reach of most sports today, isn't enough to justify the cost of participation in that sport.
Sure, makes perfect sense. And the other thing I was going to ask was, since you've been around or were around it, and not quite at the beginning, but, you know, the early days of it, you and I both remember, and you've mentioned a couple tracks like Mansfield. They'd go to Louisville. They'd go to these short tracks. Now we're not only running at mile and a half, we're running at super speedways. And those trucks were not built to run at super speedways. And we see the carnage that happens. So, you know, what are the – I don't know what I'm asking other than, can we get back to where it was short tracks? Can we get back to where it was standalone special events at some of these – regional tracks, or is that another thing that we're just spitting in the wind about? You know, I'm asking how from this point can we make the truck series viable on its own, or can we?
Yeah, you know, I don't think none of the non-cup divisions in NASCAR are ever going to be completely viable on their own. I mean, they're always going to be dependent on the major league entity, the same way that, you know, as you know, I'm a huge minor league baseball fan, a minor league sports fan as a whole. You know, minor league baseball operating independently of major league baseball doesn't work. You know, minor league sport has to have major league feeding. It just has to have some form of a mothership source to feed it. And so trucks are going to be dependent in that fashion, the same as Xfinity is going to be dependent, ARC is going to be dependent, et cetera. I will tell you, I'm probably more optimistic about where truck racing is heading now than I would have been 5 years ago, because of what I continue to see as the shift in focus and the change of the leadership and the direction of leadership. You know, the diversification of the cup schedule, the learning and learning how to host these events in other markets and how to change where you're racing at and how you're racing is going to benefit all of the divisions, because all of the divisions are going to have opportunities to go and do things different than they've been doing them. You know, I also think the next television deal will determine some of the viability of, you know, how you can build a schedule. You know, if your business model in negotiating with television is that you simply want the highest revenue number, regardless of what it means, then you're going to race at 1 o'clock in the morning on a Tuesday if television tells you to race at 1 o'clock in the morning on a Tuesday.
Yeah.
You know, but if what you do with your television package is if you build a partnership and you are figuring out how to build dynamic events, then you get something different. You know, the same level of success you saw with a cup, with them going to, say, you know, taking the Clash to the Coliseum and racing in a football stadium, you can think that same way and say, okay, where can trucks go and do? Where can a truck race go and do something different? Can a truck race go to, you know, a flat half-mile dirt track at a fairgrounds somewhere in the Midwest in the summer, you know? And you played with that some with Eldora, but, you know, you can build events that way. And I think there's a lot more interest in building events among the senior level people that are in charge in Charlotte and Daytona than there was a half generation ago, when the last TV deal was negotiated.
Well, shifting gears just a little bit, popular win, I think, this past weekend in Vegas with Rajah Caruth. What do you think a win like that can do for the sport, a personality like that can do for that series? I think there's a lot of positive there. I'd love to hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I first met Rajah actually at a Washington Wizards game 2 years ago. Just was happened to be at, you know, I was in for the King Day weekend with my wife doing the Smithsonian stuff, and wanted to go to a game, and we went to a Wizards game, and they had him on the screen. So I went and sought him out and found him, and was like, you know, very impressed with who the young man was. He's incredibly articulate. He is naturally fast. And as a guy who has watched a lot of race car drivers, you know, you can teach race car drivers a lot of things. You can't teach them to be fast. And that young man is as naturally fast as any driver I've seen come into NASCAR over the last decade.
Excellent. Well, I'll ask one more question. I'll let Jake take over for the end here. But I don't know if you could tell it. You don't have to tell this story, but do you have a good Kevin Harvick early days story that you can share?
You know, Kevin had some interesting experiences with us. You know, I still tell people, you know, we are the only race team that haven't had Kevin Harvick for a full year or more and never found a way to win a race with him. So, you know, we can be really proud of our fact that we got him like 4 second place finishes, but we never could win a race with him. So obviously we were all geniuses. Probably the thing that surprised me the most, and some of this is having Kevin a year plus removed from having Kenny Irwin. You know, Kenny was this bubbling, effervescent, life of the party personality who never understood that when he was on the street that he wasn't still driving a race car. And Kevin drove the apron of the interstate. He would run into the grass to pass people. Kenny just ran like crazy. So we saw when we hired Kevin, many of us saw the same talent level and we expected the same personality. And what we got was very different. You know, Kevin was the guy who drove 10 mile an hour under the speed limit down the interstate, who never was aggressive. You know, we were like, what is up with you? You will kill your mom to win a race, but you won't even pass a guy going 40 on the interstate. You know, that was the thing I always forget. And I watched the I Am Kevin Harvick thing the other day. And I'm looking at, you know, when Kevin talked about in that, how I was never really out of control, all of that, you know, the anger and the frustration, all of that was calculated. I totally believed that it was happening because the guy I worked with was absolutely calculating in everything he did. And, you know, I knew from day one he was going to go on and be a superstar and win a lot of races, you know. And probably the thing I'm most happy for him, and I'm happy for him and Dee and how they've grown up, you know. They were a couple of kids that found each other and found a way through a big storm to get to where they're at. And I'm tickled for him. I mean, it's, you know, he's my great claim to fame. I'll claim him forever, you know.
That's cool.
I knew him
that's
when. Cool. but yeah, cool. That's the biggest thing was he drove like he was 80 years old when he was 24 on the interstate. So.
Jake, go ahead and jump in, man. We're about out of time.
Well, we're about out of time. I got one more question for you. And, you know, obviously this is a great insight to a lot of things that go on, you know, in the Truck Series, especially, you know, with the future of the sport, you know, being the way it is from the fans' perspective. But, you know, you mentioned that you watch a lot of sports other than just racing. You know, you're into basketball, you're into baseball. You're a big mid-major guy. So tell us which mid-major team you think is going to make a run in March Madness this year, considering we had three mid-major teams in the Final Four last year.
You know, Will Wade and McNeese State is awful hard to pick against.
Nice.
I think that's going to be a really interesting team. You know, and I think Will's going to have an opportunity at the end of the, you know, if he can go out and win two games in that tournament and get himself to the Sweet 16, he's going to have a chance to get a big paycheck and get right back on that track where he was before the whole LSU thing blew up with the FBI investigation. I will probably pick McNeese State in my primary bracket to go a couple of rounds. You know, I think that you know, whoever comes out of the Missouri Valley is going to be really hard and tested, you know. And if it's Drake, if it's Indiana State, or if it's one of the others, I tell you, Belmont healthy is really dangerous. And Bradley, despite what happened to them the other night, they're dangerous. You know, I told you guys before we went on the air, you know, I'm excited about that whole tournament, you know, so, you know, we'll see who it is. I mean, anybody, whoever comes out of that Missouri Valley is going to be dangerous. And then I think McNeese State. So.
Excellent. Where can folks find you on Twitter?
At Spotter Tim, which, you know, I started the Twitter thing back whenever I was still spotting races. And even though I don't spot anymore, too old, not enough eyesight, but, you know, I kept it because that was kind of where people knew me. And of course, you know, I got into Twitter because I wanted to see all the cool guys like the Orange Cone and Drunken Brian France. And, you know, that was the only reason I ever got on Twitter was to see the world according to those guys and to get a chance to meet them in real life. And it's worked out really well for me.
Well, that's cool. I want to have you back on at some point. I want to hear some Kenny Irwin stories, but I appreciate you joining us, brother.
Very good. I appreciate it, man. You guys, hopefully we've had a good time today and shared a little bit of sunshine. So take care, fellas. Good to talk to
Thanks,
you.
Thanks, man.
Absolutely. Tim Stevens, thank you so much for hopping on. Stay with us. Rattling Cages, the final segment coming up right here on Fan Run Radio.
Ever been the coach who realized the team's gear just wasn't up to par? Well, if I'm being honest, that was me. Just a downright irresponsible and plain bad coach. Then SM Athletics changed the game. I want you to picture this. I walk into their store, a coach with a vision. SM Athletics didn't just see a coach. They saw a team's potential. And they delivered custom uniforms so striking. Our team's spirit soared. From cutting-edge apparel to top-notch equipment, SM Athletics transformed our presence. No more unreliable online orders or envying the other team's style. SM Athletics stands for quality, design, and on-time delivery every time. Coaches, elevate your team with SM Athletics. Call 865-966-3434 or visit smathletics.com. Get the best for your team, delivered right and on time. So, elevate your team's game by contacting SM Athletics today.
Are you in need of a smile makeover? Hi, I'm Dr. Michael Costa at Knoxville Smiles, and if you're ready to improve your smile, replace teeth that are missing, make your dentures tighter, add implants to your mouth, whatever you may need, we're here to discuss a wide range of easy, pain-free cosmetic and restorative procedures that can create a glowing, radiant smile that you've always dreamed of. Don't wait any longer. The time is now. Call us today at Knoxville Smiles and schedule your appointment at 865-539-1776 or go online to KnoxvilleSmiles.com.
Your tax refund belongs to you, not an identity thief. Over $6 billion in tax refunds were flagged by the IRS for possible identity theft last year. If you're in a bind this tax season, LifeLock can help. They monitor and alert you to identity threats you'd miss on your own, even if you're careful with your personal information. And if you do become a victim of tax-related identity fraud, LifeLock has U.S.-based restoration specialists ready to help solve your identity theft issue. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. Let LifeLock help protect your financial info, so all you have to worry about is what you do with your tax refund. Go to LifeLock.com, save up to 25% off your first year. The promo code is HERD, promo code H-E-R-D, to save up to 25% off your first year. LifeLock.com. Identity theft protection starts here.
Ever been the coach who realized the team's gear just wasn't up to par? Well, if I'm being honest, that was me. Just a downright irresponsible and plain bad coach. Then SM Athletics changed the game. I want you to picture this. I walk into their store, a coach with a vision. SM Athletics didn't just see a coach. They saw a team's potential. And they delivered custom uniforms so striking. Our team's spirit soared. From cutting-edge apparel to top-notch equipment, SM Athletics transformed our presence. No more unreliable online orders or envying the other team's style. SM Athletics stands for quality, design, and on-time delivery every time. Coaches, elevate your team with SM Athletics. Call 865-966-3434. 3434 or visit smathletics.com. Get the best for your team, delivered right and on time. So, elevate your team's game by contacting SM Athletics today.
Spend my dollar parking a holler neath the mountain moonlight. Hold her up tight, make a little loving, a little turn of loving on a Mason-Dixon line. Fits my life, oh so right, my Dixieland delight.
Final segment of the program. Spotter Tim Stevens, what an appearance by him. JL, we learned a lot from that guy.
You know, he raised some great points about the viability of the series and how, you know, with TV, it's all tied to the Cup Series now. And but he's optimistic about how this new TV package might help the series. I also found it interesting, and I'll admit I'm part of this, when Pockrass puts out the purse money and you look at how low it is, you think, boy, how are these guys making it? But Tim showed us, told us, you know, walked us through how you don't count on that money when you're building a budget, and how business to business relationships are important. And we're seeing that more now in the Cup Series as well. So I appreciate his insight. We definitely want to have him back, and I hope everybody learned as much as we did.
Absolutely. And, you know, you'd mentioned, you know, that was something that was really the highlight that really caught my eye in that interview was, or caught my ears, I should say. But when you think about the purse money, that has to be distributed evenly, or not evenly, but tiered in whichever way you finish.
Sure.
You look at it, and someone had made the comment a few years ago, actually a lot of people made a comment, about Kyle Busch racing in the Truck Series. And then, of all people, Brad Keselowski comes to his defense, and he says, well, what people don't realize is how much this guy really just wants to go out and win, because this guy is willing to lose money to go out and add another win to the win column.
Well, he was for a little bit till he sold his team.
Yeah, now he's not losing any money.
You know, I mean, I get it. It's just, unfortunately, the pay-to-play is here. Joey Logano did an interview this past week where he talked about, you know, even as a NASCAR Cup champion, if he wants to dip down into the lower series, if he wants to jump in a truck, he's got to bring money. It's either out of his pocket or a sponsor that's willing to put him in that truck. So that's just the economic reality of it today. You know, I would love to see the Truck Series do more standalones, but okay, now what are you doing as far as cost of bringing in a crew when you can rent a Cup or Xfinity crew when they're all racing at the same place? Now you've got the logistics of where you guys are coming from and paying them more money. So I think it is what it is. As much as I hate that phrase, what we have with the Truck Series, hopefully we'll see some improvements with the new TV package. But I like Tim's insight into how you build it into an event. You know, the
right.
Promoters got to be able to sell the tickets, to pay the bills, and then make some money, or it's just not going to work. And, you know, I appreciate him sharing that with us. And even as a longtime fan of the sport, I picked up some nice insight there.
Absolutely. And it is time to make our picks presented by SM Athletics. Hey, JL, let me ask you something real quick. If you were to get a uniform for your team for this summer, whether that be you coaching basketball or baseball, is there a certain logo that goes on the chest that has a check mark or a swoosh or an interlocking U and an A or three stripes? Is that going to increase any attribute on your player whatsoever?
Absolutely not. We see that at the major league level with these ridiculous Nike uniforms they're having trouble with.
Whew, man. I mean, the thing is, if you look good and you feel good, you're going to play good, right?
That's right.
And it's not always about the logo that is on the uniform, just because it's on there means that you're just going to pay a double price for it than what you should. Over at SM Athletics, we can make sure that we can get you and your team in the best possible gear that your team could possibly have. Not just your team, but if you wanted to order parent gear, or if you have a business that needs its logo on something, there are thousands of products to choose from, and we would be more than happy to help you out. SMathletics.com. Check us out on Facebook to see all the work that we've done for not only teams, but for businesses as well. Parent gear, team gear, warm-ups. It doesn't matter. You can get it all at SM Athletics. Give them a call today. Excuse me, give them a call tomorrow because we're not open today. 865-966-3434 and online at SMathletics.com. JL, looking at the odds for today's race, we got a few that are just kind of hovering around the top. I mean, Christopher Bell and Denny Hamlin are at the same amount of odds, plus 500. Ryan Blaney at plus 850, Ross Chastain right there with him. And then at the plus 1,000, you have three drivers, actually. William Byron, Tyler Reddick, Kyle Larson. Below them, you got Joey Logano, Chase Elliott, Martin Truex, Ty Gibbs at plus 1,600, and Eric Jones coming in at plus 2,000 odds. Everybody else's odds are far and long away from everybody else. It is time to make those picks. JL. I think we might have a dark horse this week coming up in my picks.
Well, there are a few dark horses to pick from. You know, my problem with making these picks is I do it from an emotional point of view and not a logical, rational point of view, because there's some guys and there's some teams I just cannot pick, even though they're contenders. But look, I'm going with our reigning champion. He took care of business here the last time they were in Phoenix. I'm going with Blaney for the win. My second choice is, it is a Toyota, but it's not a Gibbs Toyota. It's Tyler Reddick. And then, I guess you call him a dark horse, even though he's starting up front, Eric Jones, So those are my three for today.
I'm going to ride with Eric Jones on that one. My other two picks, I'm going to take, you know, they've just been dominant, and this guy's not got a win in a couple of seasons, but he's got to be right up there with him. We're going to take Chase Elliott as my second pick.
Oh, I'm sick to my stomach.
And then I'm going to go with one of the favorites to win this race, Denny Hamlin, as my third. Those are the picks of the week presented by SM Athletics. I did not want to pick that nine car.
Well, you know, the 9 and 11 both to me, but Hamlin's going to get his wins. I mean, that's what he does. He picks up wins throughout the year. It's playoff time that all the bad things happen to him. But, hey, let's talk about – I mean, we don't have much time to talk about it, but Chase Elliott needs to find himself back in winner's circle. You know, it's been a long time. He's got a lot to prove to folks, I think, as time goes by, that it's just going to get louder. So –
it's going to get louder. I can make it a little bit louder.
There you go.
Oh, my goodness. I mean, he's got to win at this point. I mean, he's reached the point, and, you know, we've talked about these guys that, you know, you want to see him win. Then there's guys that need to win. I mean, he's getting in that category if he needs to win.
Yeah.
Because right now we're just looking at him as, you know, NASCAR's golden boy that got his championship during the COVID season. He's the fan favorite. He's like Dale Jr. I mean, he's there to sell merch, and he's done a good job at it. But at the same time, at some point, you got to produce some wins.
Yeah.
I mean, especially it's just like any other sport. You have to produce wins if you want to stay in a job.
Yeah.
This is just, I don't know. I did not think we'd go an entire season without seeing Chase Elliott win. I also didn't think that we'd have him out for 6 weeks because he decides to go on a snow skiing trip. And then for him to come back and then get suspended right after that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he's got to get it together, because if he doesn't get it together, people are going to have a lot to say about that nine car. It's going to be like Dale Jr. I mean, people are going to be like, well, it's Dale Jr. You have to keep him in that car. Okay, well, what's he doing in that car? Chase Elliott, you have to keep him in that car. Okay, well, what's he done for me in the past 18 months?
Yeah. That's a long time. That's an eternity.
I mean, especially in the NASCAR world, that's a long time. That is a long, long time. And we're not talking about Clint Bowyer, who went, I think it was, how many days, was it in the tens of thousands, or had it just reached the thousands?
It was just thousands, yeah. He went a couple thousand days.
And, you know, I tried to do something similar to that, and then after what happened at Daytona that year, I had to go back and erase all of my tweets from my old Twitter that had anything to do with that. But I started tallying the days of how many days it had been since Ryan Newman had won a race. And I felt so bad about what happened at Daytona that I had to go back and just start erasing and just keep erasing everything that had anything to do with Ryan Newman. That is going to do it for us today. JL, thank you so much, man.
Hey, it was a great time. Hope everybody enjoys the race today.
Absolutely. Something else coming up next here on WKGN. Tune in tomorrow for the morning show, the G.I. Jake Show, the Drive, and Overtime right here on Fan Run Radio.
Are you ready to play hard and work?